From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our topic on this edition of the program, the state of religious freedom around the world and challenges for 2021. We will talk with two guests, both members of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, or USERF, an independent bipartisan federal government commission created in 1998. During the first half of the show, we will talk with Anurima Bhargava, vice chair of USERF. It aims to monitor the universal right to freedom of religion or belief abroad. According to its website, USERF uses international standards to monitor religious freedom violations globally and makes policy recommendations to the President, the Secretary of State, and Congress. While religious freedom is considered America's first freedom, it also is a core human right recognized by international law and treaty and a necessary component of U.S. foreign policy and America's commitment to defending democracy and freedom globally, and a vital element of national security, critical to ensuring a more peaceful, prosperous, and stable world. In the first half of the program, we'll talk with Vice Chair Anurima Bhargava, a civil rights lawyer with extensive experience in advocating for members of underrepresented communities about the international landscape over the past year for religious freedom and challenges for 2021. In the second half, we will continue the conversation with Nuri Turkel, a commissioner of USERF. He is the first United States-educated Uyghur American lawyer and human rights advocate. And Vice Chair Anurima Bhargava joins us via Skype. Anurima, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol. It's a pleasure to be here.
Anurima, let's first talk about the purpose of the commission. What is, in fact, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, and how was it created? What was the impetus?
Sure. So the commission was created as part of the International Religious Freedom Act. And the goal was really to make sure that as part of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, that the human right to be able to believe or not to believe, to be able to exercise religious freedom without fear or actuality of persecution or violence is something that communities around the world could exercise. And the commission is made up of 9 commissioners who are bipartisan. And we make recommendations to the administration, to Congress, to the State Department about how we can think about religious freedom in countries with which we are engaged. Our focus, though, different from the State Department and other agencies within the United States government, is only on religious freedom and that right.
Anurima, who is on the commission? You said it's bipartisan. How are the commissioners selected?
The commissioners, there are 9 of us, are selected by the president, by the leaders of Congress. So we have commissioners who have been selected by the Speaker of the House, by both the majority and minority leaders in the Senate, and also by the president. So there are 5 at the moment who are Republican-appointed commissioners and 4 that are Democrat-appointed commissioners. That will change as the administration changes in the coming weeks.
Anurima Bhargava, how does USERF define violations of religious freedom? Because some listeners may be wondering if USERF is perhaps trying to impose specific American values or the American concept of separation of church and state on other countries. So how does it actually define violations of religious freedom?
USERF looks to whether or not a country is engaging in systematic, ongoing, and egregious violations of religious freedom. And that can take on many different forms. I think it's really important to recognize that USERF has advocated for religious communities of all backgrounds and faiths, and also advocates for those who choose not to believe. And so our focus is on a number of different things that we may see in countries around the world, which are we will look at laws that are imposed by governments that say you can't practice your religion unless you're officially registered, unless the government tells you you can. We look at instances in which the government has persecuted, tortured, killed, imprisoned those who are seeking to exercise their beliefs. We look at situations in which there are laws that are passed, like citizenship laws, that suggest that in order to be a citizen or to belong within a country, you have to be of a particular religious background. And we look at the ways in which there are hate rhetoric actions that are taken within a country that the government actually either encourages or sanctions in some ways. And then we look at actual laws. So there are laws on the books in many countries, blasphemy laws, that suggest that a person who does not comport with what it is that the government says they should believe in, you know, will be criminalized or prosecuted for that. And those are the kinds of things that we look at in countries around the world. The issue is not to impose a sense of what religion, any particular religion, that should be upheld in these countries. It's not to advocate for any particular religious community. Our goal is really to look at the places in which those who are persecuted, who may not have voice, or within their country may not have voice because of the danger in being able to exercise that voice, that we can advocate for them and highlight what is going on in their countries in a way that supports them and does not continue the persecution and the danger.
Vice Chair Anurima Bhargava, I would be remiss if I didn't follow up by asking you if the events in America, in Washington, the attack on the nation's capital, to what extent that makes your job perhaps a little more difficult? How do you think the recent events in our country, the siege on the Capitol and the ongoing discussions about the responsibility of the President of the United States, have an impact on your job?
Sure. I think that the siege on our Capitol reflects the views of some that they are who America is, that they are the ones who can exercise power and privilege without any kind of repercussions for that. They have been fomented by those who have suggested to them that they are who America is, that an election and a process that includes people of all religious backgrounds, racial and ethnic backgrounds, that somehow or another that is delegitimated by the fact that the people who are of backgrounds different than theirs shouldn't be part of America and shouldn't be part of the electorate and shouldn't be part of our democracy. And I certainly think that that sentiment, which is not in line with what it is that we are trying to suggest and promote around the world, that we have tried to suggest and promote something different, which is that countries should create a space, a community, a sense of belonging for people of all different backgrounds. That certainly puts into question, you know, how we do this work when here in the United States, so much of that is being challenged violently with some degree of horror or a great degree of horror in terms of what we're seeing in the United States across the country. I do think that there are ways in which what we're seeing in terms of our own advocacy about religious freedom around the world, part of what when we say to a place like Iran or a place like China that what they are doing are human rights violations, what they are doing in terms of restricting migration, restricting rights, our human rights violations, and then we ourselves are closing our borders to people from around the world who are facing that kind of persecution. We have done that when it comes to refugees in the past couple of years during the Trump administration, and we have done that in a number of ways in terms of signaling to the world that we might advocate for their rights, but we certainly aren't going to welcome them. That is another, I think, clear way in which the United States is sending mixed messages at best about what it is that we are trying to actually represent and promote in the world.
Anurima Bhargava, do you think that the incoming Biden administration, during which you will continue to serve on the commission, will you continue to serve on the commission as the Biden administration takes power?
Yes. So the commission actually does not change. We have two-year terms, and so they extend through different administrations. And so, yes, I will continue to serve on the commission, as will commissioners of both parties through this transition and the incoming administration.
And will the incoming Biden administration, will your work change in any way? Will priorities in terms of countries that you're looking at for violations, will there be any difference?
I do think that there will be differences in how this administration coming in will look at a wide variety of human rights violations around the world. I want to be very clear that there's a sense that religious freedom is something that is part and parcel of the Republican Party, that it is focused on Christian communities and not other communities. I think that one of the things that the commission has been very good at is making sure that we are advocating for religious communities of all different faiths, and again, also for those who seek not to believe. And I hope that in this incoming administration, there isn't a continued sense that religious freedom is something that is of a partisan note. I do believe that what we're seeing around the country, I mean, around the world, is the ways in which communities like the Uyghurs, like the Rohingya, like what we see with the rise of nationalism in places as populous as India, that those are important places, Iraq, northeast Syria. I can continue to talk about the places in which we're seeing religious communities that are being persecuted that we have advocated for on the commission very strongly. And I certainly think it's going to be very important for this incoming administration. And I know that they are already concerned about, for example, what is happening with the Rohingya who have been in Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh and are being, by many accounts, forcibly removed to Basanchar, which is an island close to Bangladesh. Those are the kinds of things that this administration has already signaled they'd be concerned about. The Uyghurs are certainly on that front. And I think it's important that it not become a partisan issue, but rather something that aligns what we're saying in terms of our values and in terms of how we look at human rights with how we advocate for religious communities around the world.
Well, speaking of the Rohingya, the Uyghurs, I wonder if you could talk about 2020 writ large and countries of particular concern, which is a category that USERF has developed to talk about worrisome areas. You mentioned India, for example, and the nationalist tendency, the tendency to discriminate against the Muslim community. Give us a sense of the countries of particular concern from 2020 and going into 2021.
Sure. So the commission makes recommendations to the State Department as to whether or not we think that a country should be one of particular concerns, which means that it's engaged in systematic, ongoing, and egregious violations of religious freedom. And I want to start with some of the bright spots of 2020 for a moment, because we often don't have the bandwidth or space to talk about them. And I started the year 2020 in Sudan. I went on a visit with USERF to Sudan, where we have actually seen over the course of the last 18, 19 months, a complete transformation in terms of the ways in which religious communities are being supported and included within the Sudanese government, culture, community. And that started with a joint civilian-military transitional government that came into place that basically has repealed public order laws that basically dictated how women could walk and participate in public, that have addressed guardianship laws, that have addressed blasphemy and apostasy, that have changed the curriculum, that previously had taken a pretty hard and narrow exclusive reading of Sudan being an Islamist country, and has really opened up. For example, this past Christmas, the Sudanese government encouraged people of all religious backgrounds to celebrate Christmas with their Christian neighbors and community members. And so we have seen an about face in Sudan. And I think in many ways, they are leading the path to being able to not only reconcile, but also really put into place the kind of not only laws, but norms and standards that can create a different kind of community, a different kind of sense of belonging for people going forward, certainly led by women around the country, which has been extraordinary part of this process for them. And so we took Sudan, who had been on the country of particular concern list, and placed them on our special watch list. And we are continuing to be encouraged by what happened in 2020. To look at, you know, whether or not Sudan has made such progress that it no longer is engaging in systematic, ongoing, and egregious violations of religious freedom. So that's one example. Uzbekistan is another in which we have seen real efforts at legal and policy reform by the government in conjunction with international support and engagement to try and change the way in which the trajectory of religious freedom is taking place in Uzbekistan. We did, as you mentioned, recommend that India, based on what happened in 2019 with both the Citizenship Amendment Act, which targeted Muslims in a number of different ways, but also increasing violence and hate towards Muslims, towards other religious minorities around the country, going into 2020, when we've seen, you know, a number of real threats to those who are speaking out and trying to support those in various religious communities, and frankly, some of the policy and legal reforms that we're seeing in 2019 that were problematic continued into 2020. And so India is a place where we are certainly looking at and engaged and concerned about the ways in which things have been turning, which is true of other such, seeing a sort of rise of ethno-nationalism, not only in India, but in Malaysia and Indonesia, in Brunei. And COVID, for a number of reasons, has been something that has exacerbated that, because there are ways in which COVID has been used to suggest that, you know, certain religious communities are the reason for COVID and the reason for the spread of COVID, which in an already imperiled situation has been something that we've been very concerned about.
That's really fascinating, using the cover of COVID. But we're seeing that also in political repression. Many countries are are using COVID as an excuse to postpone elections or close down channels of communication and dissent and so forth. So looking ahead, what are you looking at in terms of challenges for 2021?
I think 2021 is going to bring a number of challenges. We are worried about what's happening in Nigeria, where there has long been concerns about what's happening with Boko Haram and what we call entities of particular concern. But we've seen some of that increase in the last couple of months going into 2021. I certainly think that what is happening in India is going to be of continued concern. And then there are places that have been on the list as a country of particular concern for a very long time. Those include, you know, some of the ones I just mentioned. India was just put on the list this past year. But I would be remiss not to mention what's happening. We've seen just torturous conditions in places like Turkmenistan and Tajikistan that people don't usually think about or talk about, and in places like Russia. And I was heartened to see that what has been happening in Chechnya, in particular to LGBTI communities in Chechnya, that there were sanctions placed by the United States on Kadyrov and others in Chechnya for those acts and the torture and killing of LGBTQI community members in that part of the country. And so there are things that are being called out in different ways. But certainly what we've seen and what we're seeing in Iran and North Korea and in places where we have and will continue to see not only problems of political repression, but certainly of religious communities as well. I think in places like Pakistan, where the ways in which blasphemy laws are being enforced, the ways in which the Ahmadi community and other smaller religious communities like the Hindus and Christians are being targeted, particularly during COVID, I think are all places where we continue to have concerns.
Anurima Bhargava, are there trends that you're seeing globally with regard to religious freedom?
I do think that there are. And one of the things that the commission has tried to do over the past year is to hold hearings on areas that we think are cross-cutting, that are trends in the ways in which countries are persecuting religious communities across borders, and not only across borders, but within their own countries. And so a couple of those, certainly as we've seen around the world and in the United States, the use of social media platforms, of technology, of surveillance to really not only perpetuate hate and persecution of religious communities and to have that go unchecked, but also to really survey religious communities and stop their ability to practice, to move, to engage, to live, to survive. We've seen that in many countries around the world, and I think will be something that is a continuing trend in 2021 and beyond. The second area I think that we highlighted in a hearing we had last March was the ways in which citizenship has been used as a way to persecute religious communities and, frankly, to drive them out. And so we saw that in Burma with the Rohingya. Citizenship was the way in which to suggest that the Rohingya were no longer part of Burma, even though they had been part of the country and had lived there for generations. We have seen the same kind of tool being used in India and, again, in other countries around the world. And so this question of how citizenship aligns with your religious identity or background is another trend that we're concerned about in terms of how it plays out in 2021 and beyond.
Anurima Bhargava is vice chair of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. Anurima, thank you so much for your terrific insights, for kicking off our discussion about the state of religious freedom around the world.
Thank you so much, Carol.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our Press Conference USA podcast is available for free download on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Well, here's a shout out to a loyal listener and Twitter follower, Robert from Lusaka, Zambia. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter. Our next guest, Nuri Turkel, is a commissioner on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. According to USERF's website, Nuri is the first U.S.-educated Uyghur American lawyer and human rights advocate. He was born in a re-education camp at the height of China's Cultural Revolution and spent the first several months of his life in detention with his mother. He came to the United States in 1995 as a student and was granted asylum in 1998. Nuri Turkel has testified before Congress, including most recently before the Congressional Executive Commission on China in October 2019, speaking about Uyghur internment camps and advocating a legislative response to China's actions. Many of his recommendations have been incorporated into U.S. laws and pending bills related to Uyghurs and China in Congress, including the Uyghur Human Rights Policy Act of 2020. And Nuri Türkel joins us via Skype. Nuri Türkel, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me on.
The first question for you is, because of your Uyghur background, talk about the plight of the Uyghur in China and why Beijing has singled them out, this Muslim minority, for marginalization, discrimination, and repression, and what they call re-education, but which we know is more like a form of brainwashing, and some analysts say even a form of persecution.
Thank you very much. Uyghurs are Turkic people with a rich history, culture, and tradition. We speak Uyghur language, which is close to Uzbek language, as well as the Kazakhs and Kyrgyz language, as well as the language spoken in Turkey today, but also have a lot of cultural and historic connections to the people of Eurasia. According to the Chinese official estimate, there are about 12 million Uyghurs within the Chinese proper. But the Uyghur scholars, Uyghur activists, and NGOs believe that the number could be anywhere around 20 million worldwide. The Chinese government has been implementing some of the worst forms of human rights abuses since its occupation in 1949 with the help of Stalin's Soviet Union. They implemented different policies, used different slogans, different justification, anywhere from a counter-revolutionary to a separatist terrorist that now the Chinese government, using its economic power, diplomatic influence, and the technology to engage in modern-day genocide with the intent to break Uyghurs' lineage, their roots, their origin, and eliminate their culture, religion, and identity. United States government has been calling China out for its attempt to stamp out the Uyghur culture, Uyghur identity, and destroy Uyghur religious practices. The Chinese government publicly say that they are engaging in a policy or implementing policy to transform Uyghurs into a normal human being. So the transformation is a code word for indoctrination, if you will, in mildest form. But when you look at the communist history, whether it be in Central Eastern Europe during the Cold War or now in China, they're always about transforming something. What that means is that they're forcing you to give up your way of life, forcing you to give up your religious practices and show loyalty, utmost loyalty to the Communist Party and pledge allegiance to the country, the nation, the government, and also worship not your God, but Xi Jinping. There's a thing called the Xi Jinping thoughts that the so-called re-education camps force the Uyghurs to learn, study for hours daily. These are not re-education camps. You don't re-educate somebody who has already an advanced degree, someone who's already fluent in the Chinese language, somebody who's already had very successful, accomplished professional life. What this is a concentration camp. Here's why. They believe that this has to be extrajudicial. This has to be collective. This has to be ethnic and religious purposes. So these camps are very much similar to the ones that we've seen in history. Extrajudicial, collective, targeted on ethnicity and religious background, and there's no end in sight. The most jarring aspect of this modern-day concentration camps and China's genocidal policy is the issue of forced labor and the issue of child separation. And also recently, we've been told that they are engaging in forced sterilization of Uyghur women. Today, in American stores, if it was not for the action by the United States government, especially the African-American community, would have been using the beauty products, the Vicks, made of Uyghur prisoners' hair. And also the forced labor. More than 80% of the China-made cotton products are sourced in the Uyghur region. During the period of April 2019 through April 2020, the export volume from that region to the United States have increased 250%. According to the New York Times, even the PPEs, personal protective equipment, that have been used by consumers, by healthcare providers in the hospitals during this pandemic, believed to be made by enslaved Uyghurs. We were talking about industrial scale prison system. What we're talking about, China's deliberate systematic attempts over the years to pollute global supply chain. Now we're talking about polluted global economic system.
What you're saying, Nuri, sounds like to me that there's a lot of convergence between what the Trump administration was trying to do by calling out China and its mistreatment of the Uyghur population and the incoming Biden administration. And so on that, let me ask you, how has your identity as a Uyghur, how has that helped you in your role as commissioner at USERF? And what measures has USERF recommended that the U.S. take to pressure Beijing to reverse this mistreatment of the Uyghur population?
I am a Uyghur immigrant, especially I'm realizing more and more after I'm appointed to serve in this government entity, where the Chinese government engaging in war on faith in China against the Buddhist Tibetans, against the Christian Chinese, and against the Uyghur Muslims. So me being part of that oppressed minority, now representing the United States government on this important issues, speaks volume how much our government cares about these fundamental rights. Religious freedom is the first human right for American people. It's in our Constitution. It's in the Declaration of Independence. Protection of religious freedom, individual freedom, human rights is in the gene of American people. It's part of who we are. So it's been an amazing experience being part of this commission to advance religious freedom, not only for the Uyghur people, but for the others whose voices have not been heard. My focus have been mostly in China, but also have been monitoring religious freedom issues in Eurasia, Central Asia to be specific, and Middle East. More recently, I've also been focusing on the disturbing trends in Europe, rise of anti-Semitism, Islamophobia. So some countries, some governments mistakenly believe that taking a hardline position on religious minority will help them to achieve the so-called social stability and national security. But they're missing the point. Religious repression, going after religious minorities, actually will create more unrest, more resentment, potentially a threat against that regime. Religious persecution is crime against humanity. Religious persecution is a precursor to genocide, as we have seen throughout history. Therefore, countries that respect religious freedom, human rights, tend to have more stable and secure societies. Their citizens' rights, their citizens' safety guarantees when their rights to practice their religion is protected.
Nur Turkel, it's going to be a major challenge to confront the Communist Party of China. Talk about what you have achieved with respect to the Uyghur Human Rights Policy Act of 2020 and what you're hoping to achieve in 2021.
2 points. One, USERF as a government advisory body have taken a very strong position early on, even when this was not widely discussed. We have officially asked the Secretary of State to make an official determination on atrocities. We have endorsed and supported both Uyghur Human Rights Policy Act as well as the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act that is currently being considered in the United States Congress. In addition to that, we have been using the tools such as social media, hearings, public statements and op-eds to raise awareness with specific policy recommendations. As a result, we have been making some progress. The global Magnitsky sanction has been implemented on 4 Chinese officials. United States government has sanctioned this paramilitary unit called Xinjiang Production Construction Corp. that has about 800,000 shell companies around the world that has been largely responsible for production and exportation of forced labor products. And also, we have been encouraging the United States government to bring our allies and partners into the fold to address China's genocidal policies, a religious persecution, particularly being implemented against the Uyghur people. So the UHRP Act was enacted in June 2020. Some of the provisions already been implemented. We anticipate that the incoming administration will continue the policy and legislative responses that the previous Congress and current administration put in place. At the end of the day, this is for the international community. The scale and scope of the crisis cries out for global condemnation, collective and individual responses.
Nuri Turkel is a commissioner at the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.